Claire Fulkes, city staff.
Mark Gardner, legislative analyst for the Bellingham City Council.
Mike Kim, Whatcom County Health Department.
John Walters, Whatcom County Health Department.
Steve Hood, Department of Ecology.
Todd Donovan, Whatcom County.
Whatcom County Council.
Gary Stoica, Whatcom County Public Works.
Larry Brown, Sun Valley Port.
Rob Zizette, Herrera, Environmental Consultants.
Amy Cobb, City Public Works.
Stephen Ward, City Public Works.
Melody McGuire, Wilson Engineering.
And Bill Hunter, from Lake Whatcom Water Sewer.
Patrick Sorensen, from Lake Whatcom Water and Sewer.
Go ahead.
Sally Harper, Lake Whatcom Watershed Resident.
Go ahead.
We'll just go all the way there.
Alfred Arkley, Watershed Advisory Board.
Jason Porter, City Staff, Public Works.
Satpal Sidhu, former member of the group. Now I have the best seat.
Nancy Alionat, Watershed Homeowner.
Carly Deckeridge with Resources.
Julie O'Shaughnessy, Watershed Resident.
Chris Haltman, Watershed Resident.
Eli Mackler, City Bellingham Natural Resources.
Hey, Van Lang, City Public Works.
Kathy Craver, Whatcom County Public Works.
Cynthia May, City of Bellingham Public Works.
Peter Dinsby, Whatcom County Public Works.
Alice Shalhoub, Watershed Advisory Board.
Go ahead, sir. You're the last person.
Bruce Ward, Lake Whatcom Water District.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Mark, we're going to review this year's schedule and identify future meeting topics.
Okay, first thing today is some housekeeping. We've got four meetings scheduled after this. I've given everybody a second sheet, and it was at the door before we ran out, that lists the meetings for the year and potential topics. This is just to kind of give us a bit of a strategic look forward to see how the topics might roll out for the additional Lake Whatcom meetings, and to also identify any particular policy-oriented topics that policy group members might have a strong interest in discussing this year that don't appear on here. So this is just a kind of a general roadmap, but things get added, they get subtracted, they get moved, they get modified. So this is just to jog everybody's memory about regular topics we generally have, a few additional topics that were proposed for this year, and if policy group members or staff have any additional topics we want to make sure we get to this year. We can always add new topics at subsequent meetings, but so take a quick look at this. Let me know if it looks about right as a starting point for the year.
Suggestions, or we can come back to it later.
And the other housekeeping thing is there was a call to move our last meeting of the year from November 26, which is quite late, but we were trying to do it every 2 months once we got to the March annual meeting. But that won't work very well for staff to present the Aquatic Invasive Species Annual Program Review, so we're proposing we move this to the very last week in October on a Monday as well. So if everybody's okay with that, I can go ahead and schedule that change. That way we're not running into Thanksgiving with the last meeting of the year. That's another advantage of that. So if everybody's okay with that, I'll make that change.
Thank you so much.
There you go. Thank you. Okay.
That was easy.
Oh yeah, the last two people came in the room identified themselves.
Renee LaCroix, City of Bellingham.
EJ LeBay, Sun Valley.
Okay, thank you. The next item is identify and discuss agenda items for this year's Lake Whatcom Joint Councils and Commission meeting. It says administration. Which administration?
I can leave that. You know, flip the paper over that I gave you, and that shows the items in bullet or numbered list that we did last year, plus a few additional items. And I didn't include things like the opening presentations, but that's not a substantive policy item. So these are the substantive policy items proposed as starting point for this year. We can obviously send out a final agenda for review before it's sent to the broader public. But this is in general what the annual meeting was slated to look like. We'll always start with the staff open house from 6 o'clock to 6:30. By the way, the meeting will be in the Bellingham City Council chambers. It will be filmed. Our open house, we were considering last year possibly not having it because we were getting a bit of a low turnout, but all of a sudden last year we had a great turnout, so that will come back by popular demand. And the items that we've got on this year's meeting start with the Lake Waka Monitoring Program Annual Report, and that's the report out of the trends within the lake in terms of dissolved oxygen and other measures of important lake health, and that presentation would be by Robert Matthews. After that, an update on the TMDL process, where we stand, what the next steps are, what progress has been made in making sure we're in compliance with that. Third item is the long item of presenting the progress report specific by program area. These are some of the highlight areas. We've got capital projects, homeowner incentive, aquatic invasive species, land acquisition, and education and public engagement. And the second half of the presentation will be a forward look for the remainder of 2018, particularly projects that we plan for the watershed that you might be seeing happening out there, so everybody knows what's going on and the specific intent of those projects. And then the county's been quite active in terms of developing the reconveyance lands into two separate parks, one on each side of the lake. So we thought it would be great to have an update of that, maybe about 10 minutes or so. And lastly, but not leastly, the Watershed Stormwater Utility District update is slated to be on the agenda, and that's also quite important in terms of long-term funding for the lake and what that is shaking out to look like at that point of the year. It's likely to be something that will continue to be developed throughout the year, is my understanding, so we won't know exactly what it will look like at that point, but it would be important to have an update.
What time does the meeting start?
It's 6:30. So it's two hours, 6:30 to 8:30.
Isn't that a surface area rather than a utility district?
Well, it's just a mechanism, right?
Yeah. We've been using the most interchangeably, but yeah.
Okay.
The term district, sometimes people, it connotes that it has its own governing body or something. It's just an area within the county.
Okay, so any other topics that we're missing here? These are it would actually be a relatively full agenda with this, but we can move things around a little bit if desired. Or if anybody thinks they're not ready. Yeah.
Public comments?
I'm going to let the board discuss it first before we...
Does staff have any comments about the readiness to be presenting out in March on those topics?
Okay. Ted, you want to introduce yourself since you came in late?
Hey, Carlson, Bellingham Public Works.
Thank you, sir. Okay, go ahead, man.
I just wondered if public comments were going to be on this agenda.
Oh, yes. At the end, yes. We will. Oh, yes. Sorry about that. Yeah. That's no problem. Okay, we'll go on to our next item. Proposal to use area agent for phosphorus mitigation.
Sure. I'll go ahead and start off. I did print out, people didn't get one. I printed out a few copies of the memo that was emailed out last week. And I'll just preface by saying that I'm certainly not the technical expert in this, but I will start it off and introduce it. A few months ago, county staff and council members and others started hearing from a proposal proposed by Southern Valley resident, Mr. E.J. Leday, who just came in a little bit ago, and another gentleman, Mr. Bauman. And the proposal was working with a company called Clean Floor Technologies, looking at the idea of treating the lake using aeration that would facilitate not only aerating the bottom of the lake, but start a circulation process through laminar flow that would mix the lake, basically. And the idea would be that it would be used to treat phosphorus primarily, but it could be used to treat other things. Treat phosphorus by changing the lower portions of the lake that has a dissolved oxygen problem, by changing that to aerobic conditions, which would then, in a way, I'm not going to use technical terms, mostly because I don't know them, but to basically lock up the phosphorus lower part of the lake, which currently we don't have it when it's anaerobic. That gets that's free to move around. Am I saying that right, Steve? So the idea would be to use these aerators throughout basins 1 and 2, which have the DO problem, to basically address the phosphorus. Mr. Lede has sent a series of emails and other materials to the county staff. I'm not sure how much of it has gone to city staff, but I know it's gone to the Lake Waukegan Water Sewer District folks. And some of that has been shared. I'm not sure if it's all been shared. But we took the proposal and ran it through the data team as kind of our technical team. And this memo here that I'm presenting to you basically shows the preliminary review by the data team. And I want to state that it is preliminary. We got all of the information in pieces from Mr. Lede. And we originally put this on the agenda because we figured that people were hearing about it at public meetings or other forums. And so we wanted to at least get our initial review on it. So I worked with the data team to get this list of concerns on here. However, we just met with Mr. Lede on Thursday. So had to do all over again, we'll postpone the introduction to this group for the next time. But here it is. So it is the preliminary review of it. And I would say that overall, the data team, being very cautious about introducing new technologies to the lake, had a lot of concerns that you'll see here. Some of which had to do with temperature concerns. Like if you started mixing the lake, would that start violating the TMDL temperature criteria? Others were about what kind of algal growth it would stimulate. And you can see there, one of the things that I will point out that I did was able to actually clear up is that the proposal to do this, there's a couple of ways you can look at the cost. One was to do a pilot cost project for about $1 million. But the other thing was looking at just and these are rough numbers, I'm presuming, looking at implementing the technology, it would be about $18 million over 50 years. So Mr. Lede, who could speak to it more so than I can, but the idea was he wanted us to consider these other technologies because the current approach we're using of treating the stormwater coming into the lake is primarily just dealing with the external loading, the loading coming in off the stormwater, and it's not really dealing with the internal loading in the lake, which does contribute some to the phosphorus issue. And also, he was proposing it as a possible more cost-effective solution than the current approach. Again, a rough estimate would be $18 million over 50 years to implement this. Versus the $100 million over 50 years that we're looking at for the stormwater control. Again, Mr. Lede said it wouldn't necessarily have to be done instead of what we're currently doing either. It could be done to address primarily the internal loading, and what we're currently doing could still be used to address the external loading. So again, my thought is that this has been brought to the data team. That's the technical team. They're giving you their initial thoughts here. The idea, what we were thinking, is that we are embarking on redoing the lake model right now. Everybody knows that we have a lake model that we use to determine the DO and the phosphorus loading. And we have a new lake model, but we're having that peer review right now. That peer review should be done this year. And when that's done, we're going to be taking what's coming out of that stormwater model entering the lake, and then looking at how that affects the lake process through a lake circulation model. This proposal has a lot of questions to it, some of which we might be able to answer during that remodeling of the lake. So the thought would be, as we move forward in the next year or two and look at the new modeling results, that perhaps we could try to answer some of the questions that are brought forth by this proposal. I will just maybe make a quick note that as I said, the time frame was kind of shortened in getting ready for this presentation, and so I was only able to, this memo was only produced on February 1st, and so Mr. Lodet only had a chance to look at it on February 1st. So he has some responses to these, which we had not heard yet. But so I don't know if anybody else in the technical team, I know Steve Pruitt has looked at it, Claire's looked at it, others have looked at it, if you had anything more we'll add. My idea is just to introduce this to the group so people know what's going on and know that this idea is being brought forward.
Before we go, Todd, you want to introduce yourself.
Oh, Todd Citron, Lake Watkins Water and Sewage.
Thank you. Go ahead. Anybody that comes in late would be a $5 Starbucks.
And Mr. Lodet is a Sun Valley resident, so he's doing this on his own time. He's a retired chemical engineer. Is it chemical engineer?
Chemist.
Okay.
Okay. Any questions for comments? Claire, you?
No, I was keeping up with the information flow until this weekend, and then Mr. Lodet put a lot of stuff up, so I haven't caught up with all that. And I agree with Gary that had we approached this a little bit differently, we might have postponed this until next month. But we also knew that there was a lot of information out in the public, and we wanted to make sure that the council members that are on this committee were informed of the fact that we were reviewing and following this issue. So.
Okay. Go ahead, Todd.
So then we come back to this potentially, our agenda is going to be, we'd be coming back to this in our next meeting with a more detailed.
Well, I don't know if it'll be the next meeting, but my thought is there, Mr. Lodet has some responses to our questions, so that'd be the first thing. We'd give that back and share that with the team.
I'll just start this, at least in terms of my perspective, County Council is, I appreciate the proposal on it, but external to the proponent, getting more clear information about how this works, does it work, not just the cost things, but you know, is it something ecology would even allow, or are there pilots of it elsewhere? Would that information coming externally from the proponent?
Well, that's what primarily we've been getting the information, yes. But Steve has done a little bit of research, not much, but.
Yeah, I had a chance, I got the references for Brian Kling, the owner of the company, and asked about any places where they've addressed, you know, had to deal with temperature issues. He says they've never implemented some place where they needed to maintain cold water. And he did tell me that Michigan was going through some changes, and they have a permitting system, and they're changing how they do that permit system. And I haven't been able to get a hold of the person in Michigan, but I did speak with Jennifer today.
That's the person in Michigan.
Jennifer Jones, who's a consultant that works in Michigan, and she told me that they don't allow it in lakes that have trout because of the cold water issue. But actually, primarily the reason is because they're concerned about how it interrupts zooplankton migration in a lake. So this process, you know, Gary was talking about the phosphorus, and it does make sure that you keep aerobic conditions throughout the lake. So the dissolved the phosphorus that's absorbed the chemicals in the bottom of the lake will stay adsorbed to, you know, clays and other soil. But it does decompose all the it's actually, that's what it's really good at. Everybody that I've talked to that's really excited about it, they talk about getting rid of muck, which we don't really have a muck problem in Lake Watkins. We have a very low level of organic sediment. But
by muck, we mean?
By muck, you mean that oozy gunk that sticks to your feet when you go wading in a lake, or fills up a lake with all the decay, you know, all the dead algae that sits on the sediment.
Not just sediment, but actual biomass. Degrades. Yeah.
So, but we would, you know, so I'm feeling confident that this has not been practiced. You know, this hasn't been used in a lake that's like our lake. It's fairly low level of damage already done, and it's perhaps kind of an overboard treatment at this point. This would be my concern. They do have cases in Michigan where they say, yes, we will allow the full lake mixing because we've got a really egregious problem with our dissolved oxygen. We've got fish die off. And I don't know that we're at that stage yet. But it would definitely violate the water quality criteria for temperature if we were to do this. because like oxygen, we have a really aggressive protection for temperature, which is no more than 0.3 degrees centigrade increase from a natural condition. So, you know, if you picked a point like in mid-July, the bottom of basin 1 is about 10 degrees. So that would then set a limit, okay, the bottom of basin 10 couldn't be any more than 10.3. And if we completely mix the lake, it would be up to about 16.5. So that's the new information I got in talking to Mr. Kling and to Jennifer.
Okay. Anybody else on this? Go ahead.
I'm a knowledgeist, and I study lots of aeration systems. Just took a workshop, and a better alternative is a hypomimetic oxygenation system. It's excellent because you inject oxygen is cheap into the bottom. You oxygenate the bottom water. You don't destratify the lake. You don't change the temperature. All you do is introduce oxygen and inactivate all the phosphate that's down there in the hypolimnium in the underlying sediments. It's a really good cost effect. It's done a lot. It's done a lot in the world. Hypolimnetic oxygenation. Check it out.
It's just a question. How long is it going to take to check out all of this information that, you know, some of which we're just now getting? It would be nice to get a more thorough presentation on the questions that the data team raised, how they answered, cost, everything that we don't know anything about yet. When is that going to be?
We'll bring this back.
I'm looking at you, but I should really look at
it. We'll bring this back next meeting with, cool. with an update.
May 14th? That's the next meeting.
Okay. Okay. Moving right along, the next item is Lake Watkin Water Sewer District North Shore Fecal Coliform Study, results and status.
Maybe I can kind of introduce.
Sure.
This is Patrick Sorensen back here. I'm the general manager of the Lake Watkin Water Sewer District. About a year and a half ago, the commissioners expressed a concern to me and to staff at the district in regards to the potential impact of a lot of the septic systems that are kind of bulkized or somewhat semi-urbanized along the north shore of the lake that are just along the next 300-400 yard area from the shoreline. And so we talked and discussed it a lot, and we decided to go out and secure the services of someone like Herrera. We found Herrera, an environmental science company. But we were curious to know what the impact was in terms of the fecal issue and phosphorus issues. And so we secured their services and put together a program. We talked about this, I think, earlier with the policy group in terms of what we were going to be doing and kept them informed of that. And they've done their work, and I think that Rob Zazen is going to make a presentation to you in regards to that and answer questions and maybe talk about where we go next, because we have information, we want to share with the data group, and then probably with this group in the future from there. Rob?
Okay, thanks, Patrick.
Rob, did you set this up so you could see your notes?
No, I don't need it.
Well, here, I'll leave.
That's good. I'll drive from here.
Okay, good. Please. Thanks.
Thank you, Patrick. Welcome. I am pleased to share a little bit about our study. I think you all find it quite interesting and help you meet your goal of reducing phosphorus inputs to Lake Watkin. I'll start with a little bit of background, the project setting. This is the wrong presentation. Excuse me. If you don't mind, I put a lot of time into revising it, so let's make sure we get the right one. How about that? Just close them all up. Open that up again. Yep, wrong one. There it is. Bam. My outline changed a little bit. That was a clue.
See, that notable first slide.
Yeah, right.
There you
I've given this a few times at a few conferences across the U.S. and it's been really well received. Thank you, district, for providing this good science. We do a slideshow from the beginning. Okay, here we go. Back to the outline. About site condition study design, then I'll talk about the monitoring results, and a little bit of correlation analysis we did, the conclusions, and our next steps. So, you know the setting, but for those that didn't, about 100,000 people drink the lake, and TMDL was written, and is being implemented, calling for reduction of phosphorus. And the entire watershed is a sensitive area that's mostly sewered, but there's 650 on-site septic systems in the watershed, and 100 of those are located in our study area at North Shore Road, located there. Why is this project, as Patrick mentioned, the district wants clean water to serve its customers, and they're very concerned that the septic systems have not been adequately addressed. There's all this emphasis on stormwater and how are we dealing with septic systems, kind of status quo, just using the existing regulations on hoping they're working. They did do some initial investigation, found that there's 100 of them along this 2.5 mile stretch of North Shore Road, and that the attorney determined that to be able to build a sewer, you would need to prove that these septic systems are providing an environmental and public health threat to residents of the lake or users of the lake. So there's the 99. Half of those were built before the 1990 regulations were improved. The regulations were improved, more rigorous construction and maintenance requirements for them. This is our study area, from basically between Smith Creek and Olson Creek. This is a very steep, underlaid by bedrock, not outside of the alluvial fans of those two creeks. And these are those, the oranges are the septic systems, orange squares. Melania Wilson Engineering in 2015 did some review of the maintenance records of those 100 systems. 55 were maintained within the last 3 years as required by the regulation. Well, almost 40% hadn't been maintained within the last 3 years as required by it. Two had never even been inspected in their lifetime, and 20% were inspected by homeowners. And then 20 of them did need maintenance. So that sort of triggered the health department to enforce compliance with the regulations in the following year. When we designed the study, and as we designed the study, we created a conceptual model that was really looking at the septics. Where does septic tank effluent go? And how does it get to the lake? Well, first of all, we have old systems. So as the older the system and the effluent builds and builds and builds, those soils get more and more saturated with phosphorus so that the phosphorus plume expands. These septic systems are close to the lake, well within the 1,000 feet setback recommended in other states. We get a high amount of rainfall. All these things are pushing the phosphorus down to the water table. It's on a steep slope and it's underlain by bedrock with shallow soils, just promoting the mobilization of phosphorus. Yes, it's absorbed in the initial soils that are still have absorption sites available, but there's a desorption process that goes, and that happens to do when water goes anoxic. Same thing that happens in the bottom of the lake. When that water goes without oxygen, iron and phosphate is released from iron, and that's what readily occurs and how phosphorus desorption occurs in the shallow groundwater table in this type of environment. So our study design was to target, our goal was just to prove that septic systems are an environmental public health threat. So our target, our design was to go when those conditions are worse. That's when soils are saturated, the groundwater table's high, the lake level's high. That's in the winter around here. And that's where we would expect to see the most shallow groundwater seepage with phosphorus into the lake, as well as potential failures or which is overland flow. That's what the health department pretty much looks for, not the shallow groundwater seepage. We wanted to be able to detect both those situations. And we developed a very cost-effective method that I'm very excited about to show you today briefly on how we could use field instruments to detect hotspots for sampling, where we could then take the samples and for expensive laboratory testing without having to just randomly grab samples everywhere. And the last key point in the design is that all the human sources from septic systems that we would detect in the waters draining the study site would be from humans, would be from OSS themselves, because we don't have upstream sources of humans flowing down Smith Creek, because we're not looking at Smith Creek. We're looking at these shallow drainage ditches. Every bit of water that flows into the shore on our study site is coming, if there's human in it, there's it's from septic systems in on the site, not upstream of the site. These are the methods that we used. We reviewed many, many others. But this is my optical brightener meter. This is the key for using a field instrument to detect. Optical brighteners are used in laundry detergents, and they fluoresce at a certain wavelength that this instrument's calibrated to. And so they've gotten very sophisticated detergent designs. As we were able to get sub-part per billion, or down to the low part per billion concentrations of optical brighteners that are in over 10,000 parts per billion in laundry wastewater. We also looked at conductivity. We used a multimeter. This multimeter also logged the position where we were, so that was nice. And then we used a laboratory test with fecal coliform bacteria, total phosphorus, chloride, bromide, and microbial source tracking. We used looked at fecal human specific bacteria, fecal bacteria, at the DNA analysis of them to prove that it was from a human source. And we used a pump to pump water up right from where the probes were, right into our bottle. So we were sampling water exactly that we were measuring in with our instruments. We did three surveys. The first one we did in January of 2016. We hung the probe and the sampler off the front of the boat and just snooped all along the shoreline looking for hits and optical brighteners. And then when we'd run up to a drainage ditch, we would take the instrument out, put it in the ditch, and measure that for optical brighteners as well. And then when we started at a control site down south where there was no humans, so we were able to measure the background amount of fluorescence that's in the lake. And knowing if we got more than twice that, that was a significant source of optical brighteners, and we started taking samples. The first event, we only looked at fecal coliform bacteria. We just kind of worked out the field events, and we took a lot of bacteria, and we looked at those results, and it all worked really well. So for the second and third, that's when we spent the big money and went for the MST and the other chemistry analyses. We had a budget of about 15 samples for that on each event. Wish we had more, because we found so much. But at any rate, those are our three events, real big ones. We lucked out. It was a super wet winter last winter, and we hit it. 1 to 2 inches of rain for each of those three events. The first one in January took us a while to figure out, and then we went out and got two in March. And again, those are the instruments we used, and these are the numbers of stations that we sampled. We did two lake control stations down in the park, down way past the last septic system, past Smith Creek down there. We established lake impact sites. These are lake sites where we saw elevated optical brighteners that were not near a discharge, because a lot of these discharges influence the lake. So we'd run along, we'd see optical brighteners. Oh, sure enough, there's a discharge causing that. So these two or one to three, those are ones that there was no surface discharge, but it was just hit from a subsurface seepage. And then about 11 to 14 discharge samples, depending on how much we had left. And we took one sample from a septic system as well to calibrate the upper end of what we'd see. These dots are the discharge sites, and the control sites are down here. There's actually three of them there. Lake impacts are squares, and then the one septic system we sampled was there.
Can you share what those impact sites are?
Where we saw elevated optical brightener fluorescence that was not caused by one of the discharges. So it was
It's not a control system, random, and we don't know what's going on.
No, this is this one where we saw an impact to the lake in an elevated optical brighteners, and we took a sample there at the lake impact site.
Just to clarify, you were saying, though, that there was no particular drain pipe associated.
Right. We would see the plume of optical brighteners depending on how much flow it was. We had one stream that flowed in at 10 CFS, and that just, we had to follow that forever. There could have been more seepage in between, but we couldn't see it because the signal from the stream was so high in the lake. So this is where we found optical brightener fluorescence where there wasn't influence by a discharge, a stream discharge, or a drainage discharge. You got that? You'll see more of this. Oh, well, this is the sort of the setup. Got the probes. This is a site, actually, this is a lake impact site. This water was not actually seen flowing, although we thought it would be, and I thought it was actually, but it wasn't, but it was seeping out from underneath the wall somewhere around there. We'd go by and get a hit, we'd go back, we'd get a hit, and we'd pinpoint it right where it was highest, and we'd suck that water up and analyze it. And then the rest were these discharge pipes, different diameters, and that's our probes strapped together along with the pump tubing coming up to the boat. That's just another more typical of the discharge pipes coming up to the boat. And there's one of the dirtier plumes. Most of it was pretty clear, but some of them were dirty, as you see in stormwater. And there's a porta potty. And that's me collecting the sample in pretty high winds in the afternoon. I've come pounding on the north shore of the lake. So it was very challenging, very exciting work. Using aseptic technique. But we came back, happy campers, full coolers full of samples, and it all worked out. So let me, before I get into the results, talk a little about MST. And that's microbial source tracking. It's leapfrogged in its advancement of science and its methodology. There's now EPA-approved methods for it. It's quite diverse. You can find sources of all different animals and humans and different ways to look at humans. We picked two methods, one which is the EPA-approved method and one which is a more sensitive method that the lab developed. It has it's easier to detect it. But the EPA method's good because it has a very high selectivity. It's very low false positive. If you see it for sure, you got it. So there's these two markers, we call them DNA markers, are good complements of each other to give you both high sensitivity and high selectivity. Source Molecular is the name of the lab. They're in Miami, Florida. They've been doing this for years, but they did recently analyze 3 years of their data, and 85% of the samples that had B. dorei, which is their sensitive one, and BEPA, that they had detected B. dorei, that BEPA was not detected or was detected at a lower limit, showing that higher sensitivity of the B. dorei method. We use digital PCR. This is even newer than just quantitative PCR, where it actually increases the sensitivity even more, being able to measure even sensitivity, being able to get lower and lower detection limits. And they do that by amplifying multiple droplets into their detectors rather than just taking one aliquot like you do in a traditional chemistry test. So we have multiple...
Pardon me, what is an aliquot?
Small amount of subsample of the water. A subsample, they do multiple subsamples of the water.
So, Rob, do the multiple droplets come out of that same sample?
Yes. So, only one sample in 500 mils, but they analyze it multiple, it's replicated. And not only they duplicate analyze every sample, and if their coefficient of variation is over 30%, they reanalyze it. So, they do it twice and make sure that they get a precise number. Okay, here's the results. Let's look at conductivity. Conductivity is higher in sewage, yes, but these are median, the midpoint of the data that we found. They aren't really that different between the lake and the discharges that flow into the lake. Now, discharges can be higher and discharges can be lower than the lake, and they were. But on an average, they were pretty similar. Optical brighteners, however, our lake control background was 43. This is a relative fluorescent unit back blank corrected. You can correct them to actual optical brightener concentration, but that's kind of a, nobody really knows what that means anyway, so I just used the fluorescent units. It doubled on average at our lake impact sites that we sampled. As I said, that was kind of our directive, was to get about 50%+ more, and we had it twice, and then doubled again at the discharge sites, and the OSS had only 660, and I'll say only 660 because when I tested my laundry detergent that I used Tide, I got 14,000. And the reason is this is only 660 is because the septic tank that we sampled, she uses the natural detergent that doesn't have optical brighteners in it. So that's your basic fluorescence from sewage without optical brighteners, laundry detergent in it. All right, moving forward, same thing with phosphorus. Our impact sites had 21 micrograms per liter versus less than 8 in our open water control site. Got up to 54 micrograms per liter on average in median level in the discharges. But look how much you get in sewage, 10 milligrams per liter. So a lot more phosphorus in sewage than there is in the lake or the discharges. Fecal coliform, same thing, goes from our detection limit of about 3 in the lake control site to 10 in our impact sites, 36 on average, and then 3 million in sewage, go figure. E. coli is the same amount. That just shows that there's no non-E. coli bacteria comprised of the fecal coliform, which doesn't really matter to you. The B. dorei, you can see we did detect it even at the lake control site, but the detection limit is actually 3, so that was a detection below the detection limit. That was a signal, basically, that they can't quantify, so we don't really call that a real detection. But over 3 at the impact sites, about 8 at the discharge sites, and 1,000 in the sewage. We didn't see the median value for BEPA was not detected in the impact site, but it was there, and even higher concentration in the sewage. So here's the fecal coliform results shown back to the dots and the squares that we sampled. On the bottom left is the color coding that we use for those signals. Blue means it wasn't detected, fecal wasn't detected at all. Green means it was less than 10 organisms per 100 milliliters. The water quality standard is 100. So anything between 10 and 100 is yellow as moderate, meaning it's getting close to the water quality standard, threatening public health for recreational users. And red is over 100, means it exceeds the water quality standards and is a threat to users in the water. So we see lots of red. We got half the discharges we sampled were over the water quality standard, but we didn't exceed it in the lake impact sites, just in the discharges themselves. But in the end, though, we didn't see the off-the-charts high levels of bacteria, fecal bacteria, that we can see sometimes in urban stormwater runoff, over 800 or over 1,000. So it wasn't, the bacteria results in and of themselves were not conclusive that they were all human. They could have been animals, pet waste, or wildlife. Until we looked at the human Bacteroidetes. When we looked at the human Bacteroidetes, that's where we did see high concentrations at 2 discharge sites. One of them is almost comparable to the level that we saw in the septic tank. And high, again here, is over 100 times their detection limit of 3, so over 300 is red. And those are the 2 sites, one's here and one's up there with the 2 high ones. But then we saw several yellow, 4 of the discharges in one of the lake stations came up between 3 and 300, sort of in a positively present, but not considered high. That's what I'm calling moderate here in this case. So impacts at 6 total locations of the 18 discharges. And then into the correlation analysis, this is fun. We just looked at how optical brighteners can predict fecal coliform bacteria concentrations. It's a pretty big scatter plot, but there's a significant relationship. And when you look at the red separately from the blue, which is the lake, and the red is the discharge, you get a better correlation down at the low end in the lake, but a lot of scatter in the discharges themselves. So it's not a very good predictor, but there is this positive correlation that we observe of more optical brighteners, more fecal coliform bacteria. And even a better correlation with phosphorus. So same thing here, we have the red high varied values of phosphorus correlating with optical brighteners on the x-axis, and as well as the blue showed a very good line with this one point out here. So we got this positive relationship with optical brighteners and phosphorus in both the lake and...
What would the correlation coefficient be on that? I'm not seeing...
I'd have to look it up. The R squared was about 0.57.
Including the outlier up there or without that?
Yeah, that happens. So to conclude, clearly these results clearly indicate that septic systems are impacting the lake in the North Shore Road area with fecal coliform bacteria, and that human fecal bacteria were detected at moderate to high DNA concentrations at 33% of the discharges that we sampled in the lake study area, with one of them being as high as what we saw in a septic tank itself. Fecal bacteria concentrations are not good indicators of human sources in the lake or the discharges based on the correlation analysis. Just because you see fecals doesn't mean there's humans in it, and vice versa. Optical brightener fluorescence, however, is a very good indicator for fecal bacteria and total phosphorus in this part of the world. And I just used this same method on Lake Taps down in Pierce County, and we had great success as well. So it's not just Lake Lachlan that it works at. So the next steps is for the health department to continue. They started conducting more regulatory compliance and enforcement this year to look at some of these hot spots that we detected and to try and fix those sources of contamination. We are going to finish a phosphorus loading analysis. It's one thing to say it's getting there. Another one is how much phosphorus are these systems really contributing. It's something that we're working on with the data team. And then the data, the management team is then hopefully going to lead another study after the health department does their thing, and we look at the loading analysis and justify that, and along with some modification to do it again and to see if we can, one, verify what we found, or two, if the OSS investigation has been effective at controlling those sources.
On that last point, just to make sure I understand you, the OSS investigation, you mean enforcement activities?
Yes.
Okay, any questions?
Well, there was a qualifier to that last bullet, which was the management team might lead.
Yeah,
okay.
I said will.
Where did it say might?
Might. Well, I'd be optimistic, Claire. I'm feeling good about it.
We're all open, Claire. I know, I just wanted to clarify my memory.
Is the
you're right.
Sorry. Relatively low amount of phosphorus detected in the control samples an indicator that there isn't a lot of phosphorus coming into the lake from the native soils?
Correct. In fact, we couldn't even find drainage. You saw how big of rains we saw. There wasn't any water running off that entire shoreline. There was a pipe. We even found a pipe. There was no water coming out of it. That just soaks through the soil, and it was all very, very stable there and non-detectable levels. I wish we'd had lower detection levels.
We didn't. I have a question about the health department. What would the enforcement be like? Have people record the? Are you pinpointing exactly? Can you say that's that house right there? Is it that accurate? Is that stuff the health department then can use in terms of enforcement?
So I don't believe the study has been able to identify specific sources, but based on the information that's been provided, we've started a survey of the entire North Shore area, contacting property owners to survey their individual systems. And so just trying to hone in on any potential sources that might align with the results of the study.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if those hotspots are like the old pre-ID systems, or how do you actually find those specific?
Could you describe what you meant by survey?
Yeah, so I guess we could just provide a quick summary on what we've been doing. We've contacted property owners along North Shore. We first prioritized folks that were adjacent to discharge locations and folks that are or were currently out of compliance with the state and local regulation of having an evaluation every once or 3 years. That was about 50 some odd sites. So we sent them letters informing them of this study and concern. And so what the survey involves is our staff going out there, not relying on a homeowner evaluation or a professional inspection, but our staff going out there. We try to coordinate with County Public Works and PDS whenever possible. First of all, confirm sewage or plumbing going all into the septic tank, surveying the site in general, drain field, any potential outfalls or stormwater conveyance features, and then inspect the septic tank, sewage sludge levels, inlet outlet baffles, and then perform a dye test. So introduce dye into the outlet end of the tank, run water, and see, and then monitor the drain field as we're conducting the dye test to see either if it's accepting it at an adequate rate, if any sewage surfaces, and if there are any conveyances nearby, checking to see if there's any illicit discharges associated with that.
Ma'am, go ahead.
Can you provide some more information on what discharge? You referenced the discharge. I'm trying to visualize what that means. Is that the pipe? Is that the creek? Is it? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's in most cases a pipe. Sometimes it's a ditch, but it's surface water drainage.
Okay.
So discharge of surface water drainage.
Okay.
A conduit. Usually it was piped. There was one open channel creek. In another couple open channel ditches, but most of them were in pipes.
Okay. So not tied necessarily to a...
Pardon?
So not tied necessarily to an individual property or upland?
No. Pretty much, most of them drain the ditches along North Shore Road. That's frankly what they do. The water comes down the hill, hits the ditch along North Shore Road, finds the pipe that goes underneath the road and gets it to the lake. That's the bulk of it.
So you talked about sampling that one ponded yard, but that would not then have been.
I didn't sample it. I didn't
sample it. Oh, you did not sample it.
No.
Oh, okay.
Because it wasn't overland flow. I didn't go there. Oh. I would have been sampling all kinds of ponds.
Yeah.
I didn't have budget for that.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
For the health department, earlier we were talking about soils that were saturated with the phosphorus, and sounds to me like your inspection is whether the system is functioning according to specifications. What can you do, or are you going to do something if it's just so old that the soils are saturated? You're going to have them dig out the soils in their drain field and put new soils in, or put the drain field somewhere else, or how do you approach that?
Well, I'll take a stab at what you're asking. So, yes, so as far as an on-site sewage system, if it's functioning properly, and again, there are certain criteria that consider it functioning properly, we wouldn't do anything. If, in fact, we see signs of failure, and there are six different types of failures, I believe six or seven, I can't remember, it's been a while since I've looked at the regulation on that. But if, in fact, it met any of those, we would then require a new design to come in and a new system be installed and or repaired of that system. Does that answer your question? Okay.
And at this time, there aren't any phosphorus treatment criteria in the state or local regulations.
Correct, yes.
Okay, any other questions?
Well, I'll just add that we're going to follow up in the next steps that Rob mentioned, and we'll be coming back at some point and letting the policy group know.
You'll have the team will have an opportunity to look at and evaluate Rob's technical report.
Right.
Phosphorus loaded, ask questions and study it and look at it and report back. You know, I mean, we're anxious to see what comes out of that process.
And I think what we'll need, Patrick, is to have a proposal from the district to bring it to the data team or to the staff team and see if we want to pursue bullet number three up there.
Participation?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll put that together.
Is this presentation available anywhere? Some of your slides are great, but they're really difficult to see for comparison. I'm curious about the detail.
What's the
We can put it on the district website. It's public information. I mean, it's not, we have it.
Okay.
I suppose you could evaluate, look at it if you're curious on our website.
Yeah. Tegan says we can put it up on our Lake Watson website.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
There was a mention of fluorescents and detergent. Is that most of this phosphorus is coming from the detergent, from a household?
No. No, we have a law in this state of phosphorus-free detergents.
Okay, so that's not the cause of it.
Correct. It's a tracer. A lot of people use sucralose, which is, the alternative to sugar. That's another tracer that's used, but they don't have a probe for that. That's $200 a pop, so I won't look at the writers.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. So I live in that 2.5 stretch of the lake, and we'd be happy to sign up for sewer, but we got information from Herrera about, you know, these hot spots and all the septic studies and things that they're doing, and would water, most of the handout is about signing up for water, but so would water and sewer come together, and also how many years out are you sort of looking at? Because we have a really good well, and our septic luckily is not a problem according to your map. does one imply the other? Because, you know, I just wonder.
So I'm the district engineer at Lake Watson Water Sewer District. So water extension, that's a totally separate topic that our board looked at and explored this summer ago. And so there really wasn't enough interest to push that ahead.
The water.
The water extension. Yeah, the sewer extension, it's just still a discussion of working with Whatcom County Health Department to see if there's some septic things, regulation, compliance things they can do to help with that. Sewer might be an option, but it's very, very expensive. So we're hopefully put all our heads together and try to figure out the most cost-effective way to get rid of phosphorus. So,
so the sewer would probably come in at a much later date, even than the water, you think, or be offered? Because I think a lot of people would sign up now if it could.
There's no plans to extend water or sewer.
We're
evaluating this issue.
Okay, well then the other little thing that most people have heard from me before about is this VRBO issue, because there's four houses that have septics that also do VRBOs, and they routinely have more than the septic allows, which has been my beef for a few years now, but. And even the Washington County Council, their proposal is to change the Shoreline Management Act in order to allow VRBOs on the lake, which I think is ludicrous, but the number one problem, even in their proposal, is that septics now allow only six people, that most septics are designed and engineered for a family of six. Gary Davis, in his proposal, and I know he's no longer there, but he's allowing six plus two. So even the proposal, the formal proposal right now in the hands of the Department of Ecology, are allowing eight, which isn't a good idea, especially when some of them are already failing. Like I could see from those pictures where those sites are. But, and one of them has routinely like 15 to 18 people. And on a septic system designed for six. So it's really a problem, and I hope the county doesn't say yes, like the city has said no, VRBOs in the watershed. And I think that's a really good step. But we'll see what happens.
Okay, now we're in open public comment. Anybody have any public comment?
Yeah, I'll just say one thing. I want to thank the Water District for doing this work. I can remember when the idea was first raised and folks said, you're not going to be able to find anything. And you pressed forward on it. And I'm just really proud of you guys. thank you so much for pressing forward, because now we can see there's something to deal with. What and how is another issue. That's a bigger issue. But I'm just thank you as a resident, as a user of the water. Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, we're getting done early tonight.
Wow.
Nothing else. Meeting adjourned.